Are you even an adult if you only have one cable box and not cable boxes?
Have you seen that? There's like this, I don't know if it's a YouTube short or something like that, with a guy and his son. And the son's like, we need this piece of 2x4. It's like exactly this size, and goes like this. And the dad goes, oh, and he runs downstairs. And he piles through all these fucking boxes and pulls out the exact right thing. He brings it up. He's like, I got it. It's my life 100%.
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams.
Hello, welcome to the Game of Nodes Milan San Remo recap. I'm here with Usurper and Schultzy, and we're going to be talking about the fastest Milan San Remo in history, as well as that finale, which I'm sure people have a lot of thoughts about why Bagaccia and UAE did not go on the Cipressa as many had suspected they would. But first, a word from our sponsor. Are you a cyclist? Do you have massive balls? Well, Big Balls isotonic sports drinks are specifically formulated for gentlemen of a larger testicular persuasion, and they've kindly sponsored the whole of our classic season from now until Paris-Roubaix, and you're going to be hearing a lot more from them. They are obviously working in the pro peloton very, very closely with some of your favorite riders to make their performance goals your performance goals. How are you fellas doing?
Thank you, Big Balls, for sponsoring.
Thank you, Big Balls, as always, for sponsoring the podcast.
Your ability to just kind of spat out nonsense that actually sounds like something that's happening is just, I can't even fathom it. I can't bring the words together to express my appreciation for your ability to put words together.
It's like your wife sitting next to you in bed, like, I wonder what he's thinking about. He's thinking about another woman, and he's thinking about Big Ball sponsoring.
Yeah, but what kind of Big Balls isotonic sports drink would sponsor a podcast? I live
for a long time with several people that I even much better than me at just off the cuff coming up with fake stuff that sounds plausible.
So like, I think people entering that environment, and I've heard this from like partners who I guess everybody's old now, so everybody's been together like 15 years, but at the time people were like, does any of this actually mean anything? Are you all referencing a film or something? And it's like, no, it's just nonsense. It's kind of, I mean, if you've seen The Simpsons, it's kind of, you know, maybe some more of it will make sense if you've seen X or Y or Z, but it's all just garbage, isn't it? It's just noise. Anyway, how are you fellas doing? Like legit?
Like
legit, what's happening?
I'm feeling old.
I'm
drinking white wine. I'm like, what the hell
is
going on?
Your little subtitle there is a little bit of a cry for help. That's what I was like.
I've been bouncing through lyrics and all this stuff. So I was like, I'm not gonna do that today.
I just
wouldn't even give it up.
Ah, okay, yeah, fair enough. I was just like,
we were just chasing issues all day. It was just an exhausting day and stuff I didn't even want to do. Like we were, say, upgrade had a bunch of issues for me, but not anybody else, which is always awesome. Always amazing. No, it was an actual blossom issue, but I think it was just something. That affected us a little bit more for some reason. And it was like that happened and like everything just went to shit because now we want to get into it, but it was a WASM issue that looks like it was identified. It took some while to figure out what was going on, but what was happening that they have, it was like a WASM VM version that when you got a bunch of contract calls, like it wouldn't release some sort of memory thing. And so all my SAID nodes were going from like, basically a gig of RAM up to 128 gigs of RAM running in process. And then it would all OOM and the machine would shit the bed and it would have a huge problem in terms of it'd take forever for it to actually clear out that memory for some reason. And then finally come back like 10 minutes later and the thing would whole happen again. Like, but the whole thing would like that whole process was like 30 minutes. So like the node, you could actually watch a percentage increase in terms of RAM go up like 1% every 30 seconds. And it would just sit there and just continue to go on.
Right. So really fully shitting the bed, not like partially.
Fully shitting the bed. Like not in all nodes, but on like a couple that I had here in the US, like they were so bad that like it would lock me out of SSH. I couldn't even get into it through like a terminal. And then IPMI wasn't responding in terms of being able to force reboot it. So I think somebody literally had to go there and hit a button on a couple nodes. That's how bad it was, which I've never really had that issue before. Like, even I don't, or IPMI was just being a bitch. So
I've only had another one once before in, like, you know, when I'm like, oh, there's a reason I stopped doing bare metal and went to cloud stuff, like at the job where that happened, it was literally a similar situation. The thing didn't respond. It was like, let's try all the different ways of making the server respond. And in the end, I think it was Hetzner. They literally sent the bloke. They sent the bloke with the key card. This is a long time ago.
I will hit the button.
And like, I hit the button and got to the thing. It's just like, unfortunately, your server is making a big smoke. Make a big smoke, big red, lots of red, red lights.
It's not really a Hetzner accent. That's more of a.
Why I was going for, I was trying to go for Finland, and I realized I've literally never. It'd be Scandinavian, I would get, but then Finland is so, like, it's so far north. Is it that Scandi an accent?
I don't know.
I'm gonna fucking look it up after this podcast.
Anyway,
geez, any Finnish people watching, we love your data centers. They're great. But yeah, the box was toast. That was the actual thing.
That's the end of it.
Starting that motherfucker was going to bring it back to life.
Yeah. So anyways, they sent some dude, or it could be anybody. It'd be a dude. And so anyway, so then it turned out we were doing a bunch of stuff with tracing and profiling and trying to see what was going on. Profiler wasn't really showing anything. And then I was just looking at, I think we determined it was contract based. Like it was clearly something based on number of calls, because other validator nodes did not have the issue. It was only when we were getting calls, which made me thought it was something related to contract calls. And then we started looking at the, you know, WASM VM type shit, and realized that there was a huge issue that was solved in the point version after the one that they were using. And so they quickly created a little, wasn't non-breaking, it's just a hot fix. And so we pushed that out and totally solved. And then it took me another 2 hours to actually get the other nodes that were so completely fucked to unfuck themselves. And then there we are. Now we're back. Now we have 13 nodes rocking and rolling. Actually, we haven't.
Now you're ready to start the day.
Good. We're ready to start the day. I'm ready to do something.
We did have a node, go down as well. And what was nice about it was it did the same thing you did. However, apparently we had a kernel update queued. And so when it shut down, it then went to the kernel update. And that forked. And so then James had to go in and actually roll back the kernel. Multiple things.
Like fucking problem layered on top of problems. Yeah. That sounds about right too. Yeah.
OVH Cloud was like, this sounds like a you issue. And I was like, probably is a me issue, isn't it?
Well, when the first node did it, like after the upgrade, everything else looked fine. Actually, it wasn't like that bad. And then there's like two, like one node in the US was not responding. It was really weird, but it was pinging, but like you couldn't get SSH. Everything was like kind of screwed up, and it kind of had that smell of like bad hardware, like a drive died or something like that. So that was my first thing. Is like, I think this thing might have maybe it could be drive, or maybe just like screwed up, and then everything else started failing, like fucking Zabbix. Like I almost turned off all alerts. I was like, because you get at some point. Like when you get like 75 Zabbix alerts on a row, like you start to get desaturated. You're just like, I'm gonna stand up and walk away from this. So, how do I trace this back to what the issue is? So, but somehow like there was always like at least one or two nodes that are up. So I don't think we even had any outages during that process. It was just a bunch of it's just painful because it's not, you just, everything else has to stop, right? You're just kind of, you're 100% of your attention is devoted to this thing, and you really can't do anything else until that thing is resolved, and that can be sometimes pretty frustrating because everything else is like sitting on the side type of idea.
So does that mean that's what you were doing while I was messaging you about DropShare?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was a nice, diversion. It was a nice diversion though. Yeah. I was like, here, do this. Yeah. DropShare is a little macOS tool that allows you to take screenshots and then upload them to different locations. So I've used like something like this. There's been a couple of these, but I've been using these like, for like 10 or 15 years. And this one is actually, DropShare is quite good. I'll put a link in the show notes for it. But if you're on macOS, it allows you to create a little key combo, and then you basically take a little screenshot, or you can do like a window screenshot with a little drop shadow, or you can even do little pretty screenshots where it puts like a background behind it and all this type shit. And then you can upload those to like a SFTP server or to S3 or a Minio server or like anything. Like really, you can put it anywhere. And then it gives you, then once you put that screenshot, it puts a link in like in your clipboard. And so that's been, it's like really handy because you just want to take a quick screenshot of something and then dump it somewhere. And then it uses mnemonics in the name, which is really nice because you can use like a GUID or a mnemonic or something else. So you can't like go and discover them because sometimes you might have some sensitive information there. Although I try to
I did wonder why whenever you shitpost memes on any channel and it does that thing. Yeah. It does that thing on a mobile device where it shows you the file name just before it loads.
It always
says like "usurper is typing," and then it says something like "accidentally houseplant Rottweiler."
That's exactly what it is. Yeah,
I'm like, has he finally had a nervous breakdown? And then
do you think I was handcrafting those?
Yeah, an image of the Simpsons appears, and I'm like, oh, okay. Fly.
No, it's cool. And then that link can be anywhere, and it's nice because you can. It's like I said, it's non-discoverable, and you know, there's something associated to that where you can. It's only four mnemonics, but still, or five or something like that. But like, you're not going to figure those things out.
Well, Dropshare now has an AI thing where it'll analyze the screenshot and give you.
That sounds like the worst idea ever, right? Like, I
know. It's like, how about I pay
Social Security number -421
to not fucking analyze anything on your bullshit ass service. Don't collect any data. Don't store that data. Certainly do not fucking store that data on your broken ass Postgres server with bad security.
I don't know. I mean, I saw that functionality. I'm like, I don't know why somebody would use that. I don't know where you would take screenshots of that you want the description of the item in the name. I guess maybe, I don't know, maybe.
If you just really want to get owned.
Ooh, now I'm curious. I'm gonna turn it on, the AI, and then I'm gonna screenshot our image here with all three of us in it and see what it says.
It's going to say three tired guys.
Aging man.
Plus three angry men.
Two other dudes.
Three massive nerds. Three massive nerds with mid-tier headsets is what I believe it was going to say. Oh, sorry, two massive nerds with mid-tier headsets and one massive nerd with unnecessarily good headset.
I think that's you.
Yeah, I don't know. I assume there's substantially better ones.
You need an open AI key in order to do it, so I'm not that committed.
It's V4 too, right, isn't it? I think it's open AI V4 if you want.
I think so, yeah. So I'm definitely not that committed.
I think I have
it,
yeah.
Sounds like a lot of hassle. A lot of hassle.
It does. But anyway, it's good to be here. It's good to be on Game of Nodes.
It's good to be on Game of Nodes.
It is. We have no news. We have no guests.
We do have some news.
We can talk about whatever the hell we want. Oh, we do have some news.
We do have some news. I mean, I think we needed to give you a break from guests, usurper. Like, a gift to you.
After we only had one in 6 weeks or something.
We have one a month, and every time it gives you PTSD. Or especially sometimes it gives you PTSD. I'm just fucking stoked today because. I've just had a day where there's been no teething, no illness, no whatever. I just had like quite a happy small
human. Just a good baby day.
Yeah. A happy small human who's kind of at the edge of toddling. So sort of just crawling around the house, like following you. And every time you turn around and pull a face, you are the funniest person in the universe. They're just like cackling like a little comedy witch. And you're like, this is great. Why doesn't everybody have children? And you remember like the broken night, all of this, and you're like, this is what people mean when they say cherish the moment. So isn't it? You're just like,
that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty good. And, apps stress nets come to an end. Obviously yes. we don't know so much about like what was, it seemed like the networking stuff did not no bueno. So it would be interesting to see the write up when they do it of what kind of is going to come out of that. But,
yeah, I thought I was 100% assured that thing was going to get extended because it just seemed like there was some pause. Like we had a halt for what it was supposed to be like 2 or 3 days out of the
it was nearly
2 weeks, right?
It's nearly 72 hours. There was a halt for because of the networking thing. So I was to say I thought and we cut it quite fine to the beginning. To see if we could only pay for a month of high performance servers. And of course it ended like 2 days after when all the servers got renewed and we had to pay for them for another month. So, maybe you just need to run those things and just put it on a yearly lease and just forget about it. I don't know.
But I just canceled them all. It felt so good. I've been canceling so many things.
It does
lately.
Feel good to cancel service, doesn't it?
Oh, like when you hit that cancel button and you're like, it feels so fucking good. It does. It really feels good.
And we finished moving offices as well, actually. That's the other thing. We finished moving offices as well. I think I sent you fellas a picture of the, I think I sent you a picture of just, I was the keenest and got there, sat at my desk, and then didn't fucking help anybody else. I just set my desk up, plugged in the power strip, and was like, see you fellas next week. Completely empty room. I'm like, I'm out. I've got actual work to do, and this looks like a building site, so I'm going to go somewhere else to do that work. It's been all right. We moved offices. I handed in a first draft of my paper. So you fellas.
You did?
Yeah. So, really? So you fellas, I'm probably going to need to put you in the acknowledgements or some shit. Like, just be like, this paper could not have happened without the emotional support of Schultzy. No other explanation.
This is, which one is this one about?
It's a paper basically about how, anybody who works in the space knows that ledgers are just fancy databases and they're not immutable. People have been saying this for a very long time, and you can dredge up Vitalik articles from like early Ethereum days that go on and on about, all probability is, all finality is probabilistic and stuff like that. It's, big quote. And it's basically a demonstration that there's game theoretic work that was done before cryptocurrencies were even a thing that demonstrates a number of different risk factors for when actors in a system would be incentivized to change balances, to steal, to do things like that. And so it sort of applies some of that logic to a ledger. And says, and just sort of like war games, like, okay, like here's a bunch of scenarios where an address constitutes an identity, an identity constitutes a threat, cybersecurity threat. Are there any examples where these things have been exploited and kind of like takes that sort of thread and then offers some systemic solutions that make, use economic incentives to make that not worth doing, basically. Maybe a good example would be something like Secret, where like for all the flaws in Secret, like the fact that it is a privacy first network means that you either targeting an individual or targeting certain parts of the network, very, very hard to actually work out ahead of time what your expected gain would be from actually trying to exploit something, which would be a very non-trivial, effort. And when you try and attack something where it's sort of privacy by design, especially something where it has a similar export mechanism, something like Cosmos chain, you just go, okay, well, they've just fucked the state of the ledger. It's exactly the same as a hard fork upgrade. You'd just be like, well, okay, we're just going to restart the ledger. And kind of like Juno did, after its cyber attack. But actually, to be fair, even that is an interesting example of where everybody's like, okay, this is not Byzantine. We've all agreed this is not Byzantine, but we are also going to, the ledger has stopped. We're going to skip a block and we're going to start it again. That is a Byzantine fault, like classic definition of one, classic break of actual immutability, break in history, full disjoint. And again, what's interesting is actually from an academic standpoint, there is purely technically, that is a Byzantine fault, but like there is a difference of opinion as to whether that matters. And there's obviously a difference of opinion as to whether that matters in, discourse of people who actually stake and buy cryptocurrencies and trade cryptocurrencies and all sorts of stuff. So anyway, It's just exploring some of these things and like what the sliders are essentially. But the purpose of it is to build a case that if you have privacy by default and it needs to be from the Genesis block, you can reveal, people, agents, applications can reveal more from that point, right? That's up to the individual agents in the system. But like privacy by default has these powerful systemic guarantees, or it sets up economic incentives that make your system more safe, given the assumption that you don't have as much TVL as, say, Ethereum. If you have like as much TVL as Ethereum, then it's all academic anyway, because even if people are incentivized to attack your network, they'll attack it with something like MEV, fucking around with MEV or flash loans or something, because they don't want the party to stop, and they don't want, they were general. I mean, you could generally assume that very few are going to actually try and do anything like directed attacks at a systemic level, because it's just not worth their while. Although a completely irrational actor or a troll still might. I mean, obviously that's a given, but it's much harder and much more complex. So
I'm curious, like, not just your, not just this paper, but overall, in something like this, where it is relatively it's relatively a very new technology, right? And you have a huge cultural aspect of these things, not just like the core block creation type shit, right? When you're going after like a doctorate in this area, and you have like these types of things, is it a traditional paper where you have, hey, these are some observations, I have a thesis, I want to go defend that thesis? Because it seems like this industry, I mean, no offense, the industry is so fucking weird in terms of cultural movement and it impacts, like, the technology is such a small piece of what you just said, right?
Yeah.
Like the human capability of that, like, you're much more of a psychologist than you are
the
technologist piece.
So when this paper
of a conclusion, or it's just like, wow, this is fascinating, how fucked is this? And then you move on, like, you go on to the next topic and you say, this is what I saw, and like, wow, this is really weird, and maybe if this happens and this happens. But like, are you, yes, like, what do you defend though? Typically,
like, as I understand it anyway, a PhD is several papers that together form a body of work, which you then put a capstone paper on to make your thesis, and then you defend the body of work. So this should have been a 4-page position paper saying, hey, here's some problems with public ledgers. Here are some ideas of what to do about it. And here's the conclusion, and watch this space. But because if you work in the space, you actually have seen a lot of this stuff in the wild, you just have in your back pocket loads of examples of rollbacks and rewrites and operational issues and, you know, dirty secrets and all that sort of stuff. And a lot of it you can't use because it's compromised, right?
What do you mean it's compromised?
You might have a conflict of interest. You might be the primary source. Like, I literally tried to find one thing where I was just talking about something relatively unrelated. And I was talking about how trust works when people are like a cat emoji, right? And they are running a production blockchain worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And I just like made this aside and carried on because it wasn't the main point. It was just like it was just a setup for something that I was talking about, a technical aspect of a ledger. And I got pulled up, and I was like, and they were like, well, okay, that we know you go on here to reference like the PBFT paper, and that's really what you want to talk about, but like, you need to justify this thing here. And I was like, well, I have, I don't know, whatever. And they were like, well, is it written in documentation anywhere? Like, how would you know who that person is, how to approach that person? I was right. Like, oh, well, somebody would tell you. And they're like,
is it in documentation anywhere?
But who would tell you? And you're like, oh, well, you would ask around. They're like, well, who would you ask around? I was like, well, you'd probably go on Discord and ask some node operators, you know. And they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. So all the node operators talk to each other? And I was like, yeah, like, it's not like there's mass.
How else can we collaborate and collude?
I was like,
yeah, exactly. Like, of course they do. Yeah,
like, it's not exactly like a cartel.
Most of them live together.
We
work
together. And, you know, yeah, we all live in a big treehouse.
Some are brothers. Yeah, exactly.
You know, we're like those three skaters in Slapshot.
The Hansons.
Yeah, Hansons, the violent guys. And it was just one of those where they're like, oh, right, so this is all. And how do you know this? And you're like, well, it's, you know, there's just a bunch of private Discord channels, and you just keep flicking through Discord channels until you find the person you're looking for. And then if you can't find that person, you ask in a few of them, and somebody will hook you up together.
Right.
And they're like, this is incredibly prone to potential failure. And you're like, oh yeah, almost everything has a mass factor of one. And they're like, and none of this is written down. And you're like, no.
Written down where?
Yeah. Yeah. And so basically I had to try and find any reference for how a typical communication process would work in a crypto foundation. And literally go look, like, Cosmos documentation, GitHub repo, this stuff, it's just assumed that you know you've got to go to a Discord and start asking around. Now try putting that in an academic paper where you're like, hey, look, basically how this works is you go to Discord to ask around. They're like, okay, right. You need to cite right. that. And you're like, you literally can't. Is it a private Discord server?
that you cannot see.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that was why there's a fun aside. One of the things that's waiting to be done for this is that in order to prove a couple of bits, just as a setup for this other point, it's, I think, 3 lines in a paper that should, bear in mind, it should have originally been 4 pages. This paper is now 30 pages. It is longer than my undergraduate dissertation. It is huge. But for 4 lines in that, I have been asked to prove it. The only reference I could find was a bit of documentation that I wrote, and it is compromised as a result, and I cannot use it. I am the only person that bloody wrote down, you go on Discord and you tag the Frey, Demi, Meow, or Jabby, I think. And it's just like, at one of us, we'll tell you who you need to fucking talk to. And that was the only reference I could find. And so I asked another, somebody else in the computer science department, I was like, what do you normally do? And they were just like, it's a bit social sciencey, but maybe just like a questionnaire. Like, do you reckon you could get some node operators to ask to answer a question? Like, yes, no. Do you have to join a Discord? And I was like, yeah, I could probably get people to do that. And they were like, okay, right. So the problem, so that's cool. So you should do that, but you will have to go through the legal and ethical board. And you're like, what? And so,
like, I'm sorry?
And so it turns out, right, that talking to validators, I think I mentioned this on the pod before, but talking to validators, I have to treat this process as if I'm going to like contact some previously uncontacted like tribe of people or like village in a really remote place or something like that.
That's the way I feel sometimes.
I had to do like a 25-page risk assessment of what the impact would be of the participants in this questionnaire and study. And it was just like, oh, I mean, I'll probably give them 5 minutes break from staring at logs and tearing their hair out, or just, you know, the constant dread of being a validator. I don't know, man. I had to basically go through, I've finished all the data protection stuff. And I'm waiting.
You did do it.
Oh, I had to, yeah, because I've got to prove this. I've literally got
holy
one
shit.
Tiny point. This took.
I didn't get this survey.
Yeah, who the hell did you ask for the survey?
Well, no, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for.
Oh, okay.
I'm waiting all for. Right. I haven't got approved from the ethics board yet, sir.
How would the ethics board? Are you going to ask us since we've talked about this on a podcast and that's forever on YouTube?
Probably not. But one of the funnier questions was, it was like, because bear in mind, the question I'm trying to answer is, I'm just trying to prove that a lot of these communications happen single point of failure in a closed channel, right? That's it. That's the only statement. It's an aside leading on to a point about software reliability and disaster recovery, right? Which is made from a technical perspective with a reference to other distributed systems and software practices, right? So it's a this is a computer science course. Like, it's not a blockchain thing. It's, you know, it's a computer science PhD, right? So I have to do the technical thing. But in the run up to it, I just go, okay, point of failure. Anyway, so in order to actually prove that point, I need to also say, well, how are you going to find your participants? And so in the original version of the ethics form that I was submitting, I was like, I'll probably just post it to a closed forum on Discord. And they were like
fucking bells going off.
And I was like, and they were like, no, but hang on a minute. And I was like, well, yeah, but. Where, like, this is where people are. And they're like, well, no, but you must know how to get a hold of people otherwise. I was like, that's literally the point I'm trying to prove.
I've got an actual answer to this. You could troll the blockchain for validation, get their security contact, and cold call their security email.
Yes, that's definitely maintained, isn't it?
That is. Actually, for probably sure. is. Maybe.
To be fair, I would say that I think filling out security contact within Cosmos validator metadata has become a lot more common now than it was 2021, 22, for sure. Validators love to dox and email.
But is your scope limited to Cosmos or no? Like, is this whole conversation limited to Cosmos?
Almost all of the case studies will be Cosmos because it's just what I know the best. There is some stuff about Aptos, but it's the stuff about Aptos is about slashing is about slashing mechanics and theoretical attacks.
Is there slashing in Aptos? There is, right?
No.
There isn't. Is there slashing for anything in Aptos?
I've
seen that double sighting and things like that, but is there anything else?
Page basically saying that this will probably happen, but it hasn't been implemented yet. So I don't know. I'd have to talk to somebody from the Aptos team to establish this, but my understanding would be that because they're obviously proof of stakes, so very heavily leveraged into economic finality.
It must be something, yeah.
Well, the minimum stake is 1 million Aptos, right? And they're backed by market makers and venture capitalists to try and maintain a kind of price peg. The floor for Aptos, not financial advice, appears to be about $4, $3 to $4. So the security of their finality on their blockchain is $4 million. Like at a bare minimum for one validator. So multiply that by, it's about 100 validators. I know it's more than that, but the number's big. We're talking like whatever that is. What's 3 times 4? 12.
120.
Wow. 17. Yeah. So it's like $120 million or so, like minimum, to attack Aptos purely in economic terms. What they've done there is, I assume anyway, because they have that all of that other stuff going on, and finality is only ever determined by incentives. They've decided $120 million for the moment is good enough. Need additional mechanics, and I mean there is an entire other argument which we've been having on this podcast for years over whether or not tombstoning as designed in Cosmos actually does do the job it's supposed to, which I would argue it doesn't. And I think from having assembled a bunch of scenarios where tombstoning is rolled back successfully, unsuccessfully, like we see it all the time. We've seen it in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. We might see it again coming up.
That's right. There were two tombstones today on the Cosmos Hub.
So who's going to hit the button? Bray's looking for it. I can't find it. Where is it?
Be my guest.
So what? So there was a Cosmos Hub upgrade today, because I know that it stalled for a little bit. But they didn't do a new binary or something. So what happened, Chelsea? We're not a hub validator.
No. It was a new binary. It was upgraded to V15, I think. And it was stopped for over two hours.
Right. But so why would they tombstone during that piece? They were just like trying to state something.
Was it like a governance gated upgrade, or was it just like a YOLO upgrade?
No, it's the governance
gated. Yep. No, so I think what the issue was, I can't speak to what actually happened to them, but the upgrade actually took a long time. And part of the issue with that was you needed a minimum of 128 gigabytes of RAM / swap, and most people didn't. And so I think those two specifically, what happened was they ran up their machine. Their machine probably shut down, and so then they probably moved their key over to a different thing and tried to finish upgrade somewhere else, and then didn't fix it. Or that's what I would guess, because that's what a lot of the chat kind of suggested from what people were saying.
Or they never made the upgrade. They removed the state file and then, the blocks should have moved forward, right?
So if the blocks had moved forward, they were just nil voting and then moved.
Yeah, it would have mattered. So yeah, they must have. So do you know how much stake did those guys have? Do you know?
I'm not sure. All that was sucked off of them really quick. Right now they have zero and like 2,000. But they were in active set, which means they had like 100,000 each before.
They had to have, because the floor is pretty high, right? The floor is like...
Yeah. So I don't know.
Because I was looking at, what's that Twitter, what's the Twitter account for?
Cosmos/bot.
I'll put a link in the show notes as well. Yeah, they still don't have it updated. It still hasn't updated since 18 hours ago.
I need to put a reference to Cosmos/bot in my paper. That would be fun.
This is a... It's a good.
You asked me what a paper looks like when you're trying to do a serious CS paper, but on this bullshit. Literally, half of the references are like practical Byzantine fault tolerance, a new approach to blah blah blah. Like serious sounding papers, I only fucking half understand.
And then there's them Cosmos/bot,
and then it's literally just like Billy Big Balls on Twitter. Oh, this chain's fucking dead.
with the double sword icon and things like that. I wish I could filter this out. I need to filter this out because half this shit is injective,
I mean, to be fair, joking aside though, so there are some suspect references that I was just like, I can't find another reference. So it's just going to be fucking Minscan again. YOLO. I did actually use a reference to friend of the podcast, Asaf. Asaf's nice. Twitter. Because there were a couple of incidents. I think it might have been one of the secret halts plus maybe the first Juno cyber attack, something like that. He wrote threads on. And so I was just like, oh, this is actually a more concise explanation of anything I wanted to say. So I just don't have to say it. I can just cite Murami A 2022, brackets open, Twitter or whatever, and then just state it as bald fact and then move on and make the actual argument I want to. It's just like, great, awesome.
So back to the jailings today. Who got jailed?
They're out of the set now.
They're out of the set. Cosmos Pool and let me scroll up and find them.
I'm trying to find them on the top. They're not even at the top of the jailed list.
Their delegation got sucked away like immediately.
That's really weird because Certus One has 286,000 still sitting there in the jail list, which is a fuckload of money. Like, I'm really surprised how fast that moved.
Must have been a whale delegation or something like that.
Oh yeah, it could have been. Yeah, it could have been one giant. It's not State Capital, right? Somebody else. You said
Capital something. State Capital something. And Cosmos Pool.
What if State Capital? State Capital's in here with only 2,000 Atom left. Yeah, that must be like
somebody's either just broken into my house or my partner has returned.
I'm guessing probably the
latter, but I should probably check given that there's a baby here.
Yeah, you probably should. Yeah, who the hell's coming in? That's amazing. So then what's the slash? What's the tombstone slashing penalty on Cosmos? I have no idea.
5%, I think.
Is it? Is it that high?
I'm pretty sure that's the standard, right? So I would expect it to be the same.
Downtime is 0.01. Yeah. Slash double sign is 5%. So that's got to be a decent dollar amount, right? At least a couple hundred thousand, no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah. And I mean, even if they just have the 2,000 that they have right now, right? 5% of 2,000 is still, you know, what is that? 100 Atom, which is still $1,000, like $1,000 at the very minimum. But it has to be above that.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And did they rebond into as a new Val? They must have, huh?
I don't think so. And they also went very quiet.
Yeah, well, you don't have a...
As I would.
They didn't come on Twitter with the, oh, it's not our fault. Something happened.
It was our DevOps. They screwed up.
We're so fucking automated that we just accidentally ran automations too many times. Yeah, I don't even see them actually anymore in there. But they must have a couple hundred thousand... At 5%, so you got to figure at least at the very minute. Well, I mean, the bottom of the set here is 51,000. So at 5% of that, you're talking 2,500, which is 25,000 at least dollars plus or minus. It's got to be. I mean, I'm guessing they're much more than that in terms of where they were.
I mean, $25,000 is a pretty good amount.
Not for a hub slashing though. A double sign on the hub, like, I mean. You might be able. There's good possibility to get in the millions, depending on who you are, right? Like in this type of area.
I was about to say, like the injective ones, they're crazy compared to that. Like they're way more impressive. Is the wrong word, but impressive.
You mean like? Well, do you mean the slash amounts, or you just mean like the value of it? TVL.
The value of it. Yeah. I mean, there have been $300,000 or $400,000 plus slashes in the last like quarter now. That's pretty good. Now, granted, I think two of them are Binance, but still.
But are they making those up or no? Oh, they don't. Binance doesn't care, right? They don't give a shit.
Yeah, Binance doesn't care. No. They just relaunch their validator and call it good. And it's not double signing. I think it's generally Pego for them.
Yeah. 0.01% or whatever the hell that is. And what didn't Null say that they're changing the structure of that? Or what are they doing with Pego? Are they changing the slash amount, or are they launching a new version or something? What happened with that?
No, there's just a proposal to make the window larger. So it's going to be like 8 hours of missed blocks instead of, I think, 3.
Oh, okay. All right. That seems more reasonable.
Granted, if you don't have monitoring, that's not really going to help you regardless. But still, eight hours is way better than 3.
One would fucking hope that somebody has monitoring to see to it.
Yeah, one would hope.
Oh man, that's fun. I love a good slashing. I mean, not with me, but whatever.
I was gonna say, I like it far less now that we've been slashed on Pego. Now I'm far less entertained by it. Still entertained, because then I can like really bask in how horrible people are feeling right now. But
yeah, my 0.01. I mean, honestly, but I mean, the question is like the 0.01 slashing on Pego is a bit bullshit.
Point
like
one.
I understand.
0.1.
Is it 0.1 or 0.0? No, it's 0.01.
It's 0.1. I assure you, it's 0.1.
Really? I thought, what am I looking at in terms of the Cosmos Slashbot? I see a shitload of injective slashes on there. What are they showing there? Oh, they're showing 0.01 on. Oh, that might be. Maybe that's a different slash. Maybe that's a downtime slash then.
Downtime slash is 0.01. Pego is 0.1.
Oh, then why are all these? Why are all these fucking people missing downtime slashes? There's a shitload of injective associated to that.
Well,
Umi gets a bunch too.
Rahmer said that Slashbot doesn't show Pego.
Oh, really?
Which is interesting.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, maybe it's just monitoring the RPC of the node itself, right? Because Pego is a separate service, isn't it?
That's true. It's a separate thing you'd have to monitor for. You're right.
You can get
that information from Pego. It's just that you'd have to monitor a different endpoint rather than like your standard slashing.
I would imagine the Slashbot isn't a particularly complex piece of software. It's just somebody YOLO'd.
Don't be dissing Slashbot. So Prism Stake Drop.
We know.
I wish. It's a really good thing. Prism Stake Drop slashed on injective by 0.1% or 1,000 injective. So $40,000, right? Plus or minus.
So that one was fun because it was like 3 days after they did the whole stake for airdrop thing. And then they went up to like top 10 and then they immediately got slashed. So it was like,
proof of stake is so fucking good, dude. These are the papers you should be writing.
I mean, actually, I think I need to go revisit one of my chapters and say, look, although this might not actually be a good way of securing finality, it does give my colleague Usurper a real good chuckle on the reg. You know what? This is
stupid.
This is fine. This is fine. We should use it for all stable coins. Put every national currency. Let's go. Let's start getting slashed.
Just the idea
hilarious.
Of like a brand setting like a 0% to 2025 or whatever the fuck stupid bullshit boost drop TM type of thing. And then rocketing up to the top based on some sort of 0% commission type of thing or some sort of give back and then getting slashed is just like, oh, that is so, it's fucking perfect, right?
It's a stake, bro. It's a stake like Mo situation, isn't it?
It is just,
It's classic.
Slash like Mo.
There's something beautiful about it. Like it's like the Web3 version of the Mona Lisa. I don't know what it is. It's just,
you know,
like,
in the UK, slash is slang for piss. So whenever anybody's talking about slashing, you're just like all your brain can hear is pissing. People are just like, oh, somebody got slashed. It's like, they're
pissing?
Willingly?
Somebody is urinating on them? Is there urination happening? Like, there's always just like a split second where your brain's like, you don't normally conjugate the word slash like that. But yeah.
Why is injective $40?
Good question. That is a very good question.
And that's the answer.
Yeah. Okay. It's good. I'm glad you guys are in it, but.
We don't run.
Well,
injective.
All right.
I think Schulze
does. Null does. Oh, look at. Yeah. Oni for stake for boost drop. TM. Fucking perfect. I love it.
Yeah. I mean,
I got to register TM. I got to register Bootstrap. How much is that? I'm doing that right now.
And then really aggressively pursue litigation. Oh, hang on.
Hello.
I mean, if you're going to do that, you might as well trademark AirDrop, right?
Oh, that has to be trademarked,
really,
right?
Pursue people.
Oh, that would be amazing. So? Wouldn't that be amazing? That's like perfect. Just making enemies everywhere.
Well, then you could be like, the AirDrop was invented by Rhino.
Oh, that's like three-peat, right? That's who owns that? Cuban? No. Who's a coach for the Lakers? Pat Riley owns that, right? So when the Bulls won three in a row back in the 90s, and then I think it's Pat Riley. Somebody can correct me, but I'm sure in the chat will do this. But the Pat Riley, then I think the three-peat word came out, and then he trademarked three-peat. like when the Bulls won three in a row, and he trademarked three-peat, and then he owns like, and then he took like a fucking ton of rewards off that, like just from licensing of all these fucking bullshit shirts and whatever else. Gotta love it.
Hate the game, not the player.
But it's smart.
Hey, speaking of copyright trolling, yeah. I don't know if you saw, but a man in a wig in England has handed down a verdict that what's his name, Craig Wright, is not fucking Satoshi.
I didn't see that,
because he's been really litigious, right? So he, because of British libel law, he's been basically using the British courts to go after people and then to assert his right to, you know, the software, to licensing, to all sorts of other shit, right? Basically. A judge here has just basically thrown it all out. That's what happened in the last week. He's just gone, look, okay, the statement is worth reading, actually, just the headline of it, because it's like as leery as a judge can get when they basically want to say, fuck off, mate, we know you're not Satoshi, but they are a judge of some standing, and so they have to say something in kind of legalese. But I'll go find it. It's worth it.
Is there a powdered wig involved?
I think judges have wigs.
There has to be, right? It's powdered.
I know the Queen's councils have wigs, obviously. That's like a given. But I think it's only normal solicitors that don't have wigs. I assume judges in the UK wear wigs, but I need to double check.
How do you not know that? And don't say the word obviously when it comes to who's wearing wigs or not in the judicial structure of the UK.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. The reason I don't know is because I've never been up in front of a judge, usurper, because contrary to stickers and t-shirts, we're not going to jail yet.
Yet. Depends on how long you're in that elevator.
I took you for way more punk than you are, apparently. You and Jake both.
Not a drunken charge? Nothing? No, like...
You don't get caught.
Graffiti?
You don't get caught. I've never had a caution even. I've been stopped.
Never been arrested? No, never in cuffs. Have you ever been in cuffs?
No. I have been stopped in the middle of the night and asked why I had a muddy shovel.
Wow, you were by a muddy shovel.
By the police. And I can only conclude that my answer was good enough that there was nothing suspicious about my behavior.
Just burying some shit. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Why don't you have a muddy shovel?
Yeah.
Let's do so around Robin, like of other folks that we know, like in the cosmos, who's been in cuffs at least one time? Rama? I don't think so.
No. Jake? I think a block pain.
I might be. I've been in once, just once.
I haven't. No.
Null? Definitely, right? At least one time.
Bar fight or something.
Bar fight, throwing a bottle out in the Yabba, something.
Out in the Yabba. Wait. So when were you in cuffs?
That's a different story. That's a different podcast.
That's a different podcast. That's the getting pissed with you circle podcast.
A long time ago.
He's just taking a slash against the cop car.
Just a little something.
Just taking a little slasher-oony.
Jake says, I know how to talk to cops. That that means you know how to get out of it. That's right. That's an important skill, actually, is to know exactly how to get out of that situation. What to say. Why you have a muddy shovel in the middle of the night standing next to a hole.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, I think your ability to get out of a situation is very positively correlated with how posh you can sound on demand, no matter the situation that you're in. Like, if you are in the middle of the countryside with a shovel on your way back into a city, covered in mud.
Yeah.
If you can come up with a kind of befuddled Hugh Grant noise and then a vaguely officer, on the way back from the pub, it's just, oh dear, it's all terribly confusing, but I shouldn't keep you any longer. I'm sure you've got retrobates to be chasing down. But I'll just be taking myself home to bed now, if that's all right with you. You just make noise.
Just make noise.
You see, officer, there was a bat that was flying around. And so I ran over and grabbed the shovel, and now I must defend myself.
A friend of mine essentially did that when we were at a gig in London, and we ran into outside, the band were just smoking outside while the headliner played. My friends, where they were his favorite band, just saw an urban fox run across the road at the end of the road and just fucking ran off to chase the fox while his favorite band were just there. And we just asked them about how they'd written like this song on their new album. And they're like, oh yeah, fucking nobody asked about the song. That's great, man. And then they were just talking, and they're just like, your mate's just fucking licked it, lads. Is he all right? And you're like, I have no fucking clue what he's doing. He loves your band. And they're like, it looks like he's chasing a fox. It was very, like, oddly spineless app. I think he's chasing a fox.
It's just a fox.
It's just a fox. What would you do if you weren't in a band? I think I'd be a fox catcher. No, what is it? I think I'd work in a haberdashers, isn't it? That's the answer.
Haberdasher. I think. Would you like that? I don't know. What are the hours?
Yeah. What size are you?
What size are you? I think we have that.
I think we have that in your size.
I think we have that. Oh, would God. You like to do that? I don't know. What are the hours?
God. I'm a bit worried about Spinal Tap 2. I don't think anything good can come of it.
Wait, is there a Spinal Tap 2 coming?
There's a Spinal Tap 2 coming.
No.
But
really?
The thing is, there is...
Who's involved?
It's the original cast.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Really? So, no shit. Is Meathead involved?
The thing makes me think it might not be a total disaster is that Christopher Guest has written a lot of good films over the years.
Yeah.
Like Best in Show, Mighty Wind, you know, and Mighty Wind.
Best in Show? Yeah, sorry, you already said that.
Yeah, but Mighty Wind, which is much more recent.
Waiting for Guffman.
Yeah, but Mighty Wind, which is much more recent than Spinal Tap, was also about music and also had the three of them in it playing a folk band, and they were brilliant. And they were just like a befuddled, retired folk musicians who were just like doing that standard, like, oh, yeah, and of course in the village in those days, you know, we hung out a lot with Dylan and blah, blah, blah. And it was just like, you were like, these guys have still got it. They're just effortlessly hilarious.
So Rob Reiner is involved. So is Harry, Michael, and Christopher. Paul McCartney's in it. Elton John is in it. Garth Brooks and Questlove. I love Questlove, by the way.
Yeah.
That's actually okay.
I mean, if Christopher Guest is writing, it might be okay.
It might be okay, right? Like they're not going to do it to do it. They're going to do it. They're going to do it right.
It would be very, very funny if it's basically like 60-year-old rockers, the completely, utterly irrelevant at this point, because that was already the joke in the first one. I don't know. I don't know where are they going to take it.
I don't know. When is this coming out?
Rama says, I haven't been in cuffs, but I would rejoinder that your grandparents might have been. Ooh.
Wow.
Kapow.
That's rough. That's rough.
Hey, look, in fairness, most of the people that were transported to Australia were transported on quite spurious grounds for minor crimes and infractions that were largely about, I don't know, just arbitrary kind of... yeah, you know, like rustle a sheep or poach something. It's like transportation for you. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. Transportation is just such a baffling punishment.
God damn it.
I'm sure somebody needs to write. I'm sure there are 1,000 papers that have been written on what the fuck was going on with that, but it's such a baffling punishment. It's like, yeah, we're just going to take you to the other side of the planet and you're somebody else's problem.
I kind of went from pure dread to actual looking forward to this.
Within
30 seconds of reading the IMDb page. Well, it's got the right people involved. Reiner's writing it and he's directing it. Like, it has the makings of doing something fun, right? And doing something right. And so I'm kind of excited about that. You know what I mean?
I guess it's a bit like, what's the hook though? Because the hook of the original was the band was over and they didn't know it was over. And that gave it a really Like it's a very funny film. It's a very daft
currently
film,
residing in the Where Are They Now file.
Like it's given that you're not even supposed to really like them, you are supposed to like them, but you're also not supposed to like them. But there is like an emotional arc to it, you know? And that would be my question. Like they could so easily screw that up and then you'd just be like, but I love these characters in their own.
You still love the original one. So it doesn't take anything away from that. I mean, there's plenty of sequels that have so fucked up that you still enjoy the original, right? So.
Hey, do you know how many sequels there are to Starship Troopers?
Wait, there are sequels to Starship Troopers?
Mm-hmm. A lot. Yes.
Really?
Yep.
I'm not sure how many of the actual named actors returned in any of those sequels, but I think there's like two or three sequels to the film, like direct-to-DVD type situations. I mean, actually, to be fair, like even really recently, like think about something like Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim was like Guillermo del Toro, wasn't it? Like real serious director is like, I want to make the best film that I can make about a big robot punching a big monster, and I am an artistic genius. So this is going to be a genius robot punching a genius monster with great cinematography. That's what I'm going to do. That's my vision to you. And then like the silence in the pitch room, and they're just like, you want to do a punchy robot film, Guillermo?
Seven out of ten on IMDb.
Because the thing
I've never seen this movie.
It was fun.
You've not seen it, Serp. You should.
I have not seen Pacific Rim.
Show it to your boys. They'll love it. It's giant robots the size of skyscrapers. Punch.
Is it as good as Robot Jocks?
It's just. It's.
Have you ever seen Robot Jocks?
It's just a great punching robot movie. I don't know.
Okay. Have you ever seen Robot Jocks?
I have no idea.
1980s.
No.
Really?
No. Is this like one of those weird science?
That is a fucking movie. Huh?
Is this like one of those weird science type? You know, like
no, it's Robot Jox, and it's futuristic movie about huge giant robots that are put on. It's 1989, and like I think it's different countries, or I forget how it actually works, like what it's involved. And there's like, and they go like the huge backstories of the actual drivers of the robots, and then
is Pacific Rim. You're describing Pacific Rim.
I think maybe it's a remake of watching, Robot Jocks. Robot Jocks is like
watching the trailer. It looks very Pacific Rim.
It is like it. Like Robot Jocks is like, all right, that's homework for you guys. You have to watch Robot Jocks. That literally a amazingly good movie. It what I mean is horrible, but horribly good. Like great quotes out of that. Achilles. Like then we can actually have a dialogue around some specific Robot Jocks specific components. I'll put the.
Oh my god! Link some of these stills. Just looking at the Google results,
they're amazing.
Hey, is that is that thingy in it? No, that's not Hugo Weaving in it, is it?
God, I don't know who that is. Hugo?
Surely not. I'm gonna look it up.
Do you make that up?
Speaking of Guillermo del Toro,
it just looks very like him. The person in the
Hugo Weaving. I wish that Guillermo del Toro actually went through with doing The Hobbit. I bet that would have been just an absolutely fascinating film, but I don't see Hugo Weaving in IMDb.
No, I don't think so. You both have to watch it because then we can start using some really Robot Jocks specific.
Wait a fucking second.
Communication.
Robot Jocks was co-written by Joe Haldeman.
Yeah, correct.
Fucking Joe Haldeman.
From?
Joe Haldeman, one of the most important science fiction writers of the post-war American period. He wrote he wrote like one book and it was 120 pages long. You can read it in like an hour and it's one of the best science fiction books ever written. He wrote The Forever War, which is the beginning along with Henlein with Starship Troopers. It's like one of the key texts of science fiction, like military science fiction, but also about because it's obviously about the Vietnam War, right? It's a story about how a soldier goes off to war, and because of the effects of relativity, when he comes back from the war zone, because they use faster than light travel, the whole of society's moved on, and his battle is irrelevant, and nobody gives a fuck. And
that sounds like Interstellar.
I mean, it's referenced literally everywhere, constantly. Because he was a physics teacher, I think, at like a high school, and he got conscripted to Vietnam. went to Vietnam, did not have a good time, came back, wrote the Forever War, and it's obviously an allegory about Vietnam. It's very short. It's very brutal. It doesn't waste any time. It's just an incredible book. But he did write. He wrote two other books. One of them was a slightly strange book, which is a sequel to The Forever War. It's basically about how what they did, because all the people who there's like a whole. It's basically I don't want to spoil it, but like it's just
nobody's going to read it.
Okay, so it's just basically like the whole universe is a simulation, right? That's the sequel to The Forever War. It's just a thought experiment, presumably because he was a physicist and he was pretty well read, and he was just like, yeah, I'm just going to write a science fiction book based in the same universe that has that concept. And then he wrote one more, which was about robots fighting America's wars, which I don't even think was published until really recently, like as in they were digging up. I think they were doing like a 40th anniversary of the Forever War or something like that. I don't even know that that was published at the time, but then they published that book in an anthology with it. So I wonder if this is like, if this film is like the other half of that period where Haldeman was obviously thinking about robots and pilots piloting like drone type robots and stuff like that.
It could be. I also think that it's a bit, more dumbed down than what you just mentioned.
Well, he's only the co-writer, I suppose.
It's a fun.
Oh yeah, second paragraph. You'll watch Wikipedia it. Article. Gordon and Haldeman clashed frequently over the prospective film's tone and its intended audience.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Sure. So I think possibly you'll be able to tell which bits were Charles Band and which bits were
Stuart Gordon. That's right. Joe built this beautiful world, and then Stuart's like, let's just have these robots punch themselves in the nuts. And we're like, all right, let's do that. And then somebody falls out. And it's a fun movie. Actually, James from Lavender 5, Robot Shots is one of my favorite movies. There you go. That's a good.
Yeah, shout out from Jake shout in the out. Comments to Forever War. It's great. There's also a comic. I think it's long out of print, but there are ways on the internet of finding things that are out of print and getting them for free.
Really?
I have subscribed to, or I've placed The Forever War on hold on Libby, so I'll have it on Kindle within the next 4 weeks.
There's a backlog even on Forever War?
Fucking hell.
Freaking backlogs. Audiobook or the actual book?
I'm going with actual book. Audiobooks really? I listen to on bike rides, but that's about it.
Hmm.
And it's a 9-hour audiobook. And if it's 100 and some odd pages, that's too long.
I haven't read a book and it's got to be
at least 9 hours.
I'm just listening to audiobooks. Big words. Really what it is.
Big text, too. Like, I mean, literally, I think if you were super pushed, you could maybe read The Forever War on a lunch break. Like, it's not a big book.
You were pushed.
Yeah, if you were just like really, if you didn't eat your lunch, basically, you just sat there going, brrr.
James says, you know what doesn't have a backlog? Robot Jocks. That's true. It's 100%. It's available today on your streaming system of choice.
That's great. Great
fucking movie.
Can I say as well, we actually slandered Rama earlier, apparently.
I hope so. I
mean, my grandfather escaped Hungary when the war started and migrated through Italy. He's a good boy.
All right.
So, which war?
Grandpa Rama. Sorry.
Which war?
I presume the same.
I would assume so. Yeah.
You know.
Pretty safe bet.
Well, I mean, it could have been the First World War, because then, you know, that would... But in the First World War, you would have had the Austro-Hungarian Empire that were quite cocky. And now I think about it, actually, the Austro-Hungarian Empire were obviously at war with Italy, and there was some very fierce fighting on that front. So you wouldn't have escaped from Hungary via Italy, because they would have been your enemy in the First World War. So that probably makes it the Second World War.
It's so fucking good to not talk about blockchain.
The Korean War, maybe.
The Korean War.
That's right. The war.
The war. The war. Oh, yes, the Korean War. Yes, I know it well. What's the film? It's quite old, where it's about a soldier that gets captured in the Korean War and they get brainwashed, and then they're going to become the president. The Manchurian Candidate. That's a good film.
Oh yeah.
There was a remake, I think, where it was like more recently, and it's like something. It doesn't really make sense. I'm not sure I don't think the remake made a lot of sense. I can't really remember it, but I think Denzel Washington is in it. And the problem with Denzel Washington is he's quite a good actor and he can paper over a lot of cracks in something where you're just like, this is kind of an action film. And then at the end, you're like, no, but Denzel was just looking stressed for 2 hours and then trying to tell people to listen to him. And at the end, they finally listened to him. But I don't think any of that made a lick of sense, actually. Now Denzel's off screen, sanity has returned. Although Denzel Washington films that are worth seeing that I think didn't get seen a huge amount. That Flight one, have you seen that?
Yeah, that's a good fucking movie.
That I saw, I think I might have seen it on a plane of all places.
I think I did too, actually.
You know, when you just like, you have like, why would they show that in a plane? You know, when you have zero expectation and you're like, this is actually a fucking great movie. This is really good on every.
He pulls the invert. Yeah.
You know the bit where you think he's cleaned up his act, and the whole of the film's story arc has led you to believe that this is the moment of like redemption.
Whoa, hold on, Noah, hold on. I haven't seen it yet. I've wanted to see that film. So if you have any spoilers coming, off.
It's
7 years old.
Just watch the film shortly.
There's no spoilers on a 7 year old, 10 year old movie.
There's a couple of fantastic scenes that are both tragic but also made me laugh out loud, and you will know them. You will know that because I have a sick sense of humor. But it's also a great film. It's really well acted, whatever. And also, you know, one of those ones where weirdly all of the minor actors are also like at that point basically unknown, but they go on to do a lot of stuff, and you're like, oh, yeah, because they're good actors.
Like, oh yeah,
good supporting cast.
Who's in that? Who are you thinking of in that movie though?
The guy from Narcos, who's also been subsequently in a whole bunch of stuff, is he's the co-pilot, isn't he? That gets no spoilers. The
guy from who? Pablo?
No.
Escobar? No.
No, the DEA guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know who I'm talking about. I know, like I said, surprisingly good, but you don't always remember, you know, what he's been in.
Don Cheadle's in that movie? I don't remember that. And Goodman? Well, I got to watch this again, actually.
It's good.
And Kelly Riley.
Wait, there's a new Alien movie coming out called Alien Romulus?
Oh, damn it.
We had to screw it up. We were on such a good run.
It was released today. The trailer was released today.
Oh, I know what I'm doing after the podcast. Link in the show notes. This is just the film podcast now at this point. As all of us tab away to put it in a tab.
So many.
Yeah, movie time. Well, I put it in our action chat so then we can all find it.
Wait, who directed this though?
Is it a Ridley Scott one or is it?
It can't be, right?
It's a. Oh dear.
I don't know anybody in this movie.
It's
Alvarez?
Produced by Ridley Scott's company.
Oh, that means like, yeah. That's not.
The director that it's doing this, I actually really enjoy. So, well, no, he was a writer apparently. Fed Alvarez. So I've watched the movies he's written. He hasn't directed anything before.
Fed showed Ridley Scott a rough cut of the film, and Scott said, "Fed, what can I say? It's fucking great." There you go. Sorry, there's a trivia
Ridley.
For
I'm
you.
Sorry, Ridley. I don't trust you. You're just a bad Denis Villeneuve.
Don't believe that.
No, that's not fair. Ridley Scott has had some absolute bangers, but he has had some absolute duds as well.
True enough. When is this? Is this coming out soon?
Interesting.
I think it's in August this year.
Oh, okay. Not good.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Coming soon to a Game of Nodes review show near you. But let's hope it's more Pacific Rim than it is The Hobbit.
All right, my homework this week is I'm gonna watch Pacific Rim. And yes, then we can talk about next week. Your homework next week is to watch Robot Jocks. We can talk about Robot Jocks for 90 fucking minutes. Because that movie's fucking great.
I need to find a way of downloading it so I can watch it on the train tomorrow. I've got a long train journey. So
I can help you with that. Yes. I'm sure it's on the blockchain somewhere.
Do you think it might be on a special Plex server somewhere as well?
There might be on a special Plex server. Yeah, it's possible.
I mean, I'm going to need it offline. So
you can do that too?
What?
You can do ability to download. Yeah, Plex, you can do a download and you can just grab it locally and it'll just play locally.
Sweet Jesus.
Yeah. Sweet Jesus. It's 2024.
These technologies
is available everywhere.
I'm still cranking up the BitTorrent client like it's 2003.
Why won't this LimeWire client connect anywhere?
I can't find any fucking what's
going
gears.
On? I need my Britney.
Yeah, just still trying to download Toxic from 2001. And then it finally downloads. And it turns out it's just the demo version of Command and Conquer. And you're like, fuck. It's the shareware version. It's not even the free version. Although in fucking Command and Conquer adjacent news, have you seen Homeworld 3 is finally about to come out?
I was thinking,
oh my God.
I'm so detuned. I thought you said Master Commander. Command and Conquer.
No. Isn't that Homeworld 3? Homeworld 3 is about to come out. Homeworld 3. The sequel exciting. To the greatest real-time strategy game of all time that fans have been waiting for 21 years, I think.
Is that true?
I thought it would never happen in my lifetime. I thought we were done with Homeworld. I've never played this game. It's like a 3D in space real-time strategy game. And it just had a lot of attention to detail, like back in the day. Like the concept art was amazing. The world was amazing. All the backdrops were really well done. That, like, you would occasionally, like, you would do like a mission where you have to investigate something. And then they would just have like animated this huge, like, obviously non-natural thing in the background, like way off in the distance. And it wouldn't be a part of what you were doing. And you'd just be like, well, that's unsettling. And they just did a lot of stuff with what, like, they only had the technology of the time, but they understood they were like trying to do something narrative. And like, they spent a lot of time on all of the radio chatter. So like when your ships are moving, they're like, yeah, Roger, whatever. And then they just talk. There's like little bits of dialogue when things are happening and stuff like that. And just
immersive.
It was just an incredibly immersive experience for if you were into sci-fi, especially if you were in an impressionable age. And then it was, and they were like, oh, here's all the things we want to do with it. They wanted to like have it so you could explore like all these ancient mega structures and all this other kind of stuff. And they were just unable to because of the technological limitations at the time. So they basically baked everything they wanted to do into the world and just made it so you had to imagine it yourself. And it was very effective. And then Homeworld 3, they basically spent 5 years with an actual budget and an actual studio. And they've gone, hey, we're just going to build all the stuff that we couldn't build in 2003. We've got the IP. We've got the original concept designers. We're just fucking doing the Homeworld that you all wanted for 20 years.
So it's a strategy game. Like, is it more like a board game where you're taking specific steps, or is it more like a first person shooter like Destiny 2?
It's real-time strategy game. So everything, although you can, in the original game, you could pause and then zoom all the way out. So you've got all your units and then you zoom all the way out to this like expanded sense of view where you have like a big sphere and you basically can see in three-dimensional space where everything is and what's happening.
Yeah.
Because obviously everything like is limited by your sensor ranges and where you have probes and stuff like that. So it's kind of like, it has like a little bit of the feel of like, I don't know, like a submarine game. I think that's kind of what they're in. It's like a three-dimensional submarine game in some ways, in that like things are a bit tankier than this, but like if you get the first shot, that is like obviously beneficial, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about that. But it's not
coming in May.
They're not going to run on fucking Mac, is it? So
nothing runs on Mac. No.
Mac. 21 years. It's been 21 years since the last one came out. That's what guy's wild.
Doing. Sitting around.
True fact, I got into programming. The first computer programming I did was modding Homeworld, Homeworld 2, because you could decompile a game and then change. The core of the game engine was in C, but all of the assets and the ships and their behavior was coded up in a scripting language called Lua, which is sort of like Python-like, small talk-like. And there's some really interesting stuff you could do. So like a lot of the path detection was designed so that things would move like planes, kind of. So a like really classic baby's first mod was to just delete a whole bunch of the pathfinding and instead just introduce like essentially a bump distance, like don't go closer than this distance to any other asset in the game. Instead of doing any pathfinding like logic, just like don't bump into things. And what it meant was, that sounds really abstract, but what it meant was rather than trying to like fly around things, they would, like in, you know, the Battlestar Galactica TV show that was contemporary at the time, they would go along and then ignore the physics engine and just go over an object. and then just continue on to their intended direction, and then always just be oriented where they were going to shoot. And it looked super weird, right? Which is why obviously they didn't do that in the finished game. They did all this pathfinding stuff to make sure they moved and they looked like planes and stuff. But loads of players were like, oh, actually, no, it makes more sense that they would just point themselves towards their target, blast off towards it, move out of the way of a thing, and then just like coast, basically. And so, and it would look visually really weird, but that's the most efficient thing to do. You've got limited propellant, right? And if you attack something in 3D, you're not going to like fly past it and then turn around and fly back unless you have to. You're going to like try and coast to a halt or coast past it and then shoot. And you could modify all that sort of stuff to try and do, have your kind of Battlestar Galactica simulator that you always wanted, basically. It's great.
Good fucking show, by the way.
Oh.
The remake. Amazing. Yeah. The original was good too, but like.
The original was good, but yeah, like the remake was just a different caliber entirely.
It was good, man.
I was watching.
Did you ever watch that, Chelsea?
I have. Yeah. It's been a long time though. I don't know if I've seen the new one.
What?
Oh. That, like, it was like, what year was that? Like maybe
2003?
Yeah. It was early 2000s, right? Yeah.
Edward
James Olmos, right? And like who was
Jamie Bamber played Apollo.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah. So fun fact, he was like a British TV actor. He was a British TV actor before that, like young guy. I'm currently rewatching Hornblower, Nautical Nonsense, as it's known. I'm a fan of that stuff. And a minor character in Hornblower is played by Jamie Bamber, and he walked on screen. I was actually like, it's fucking Jamie Bamber. Nobody else in the room had seen Battlestar Galactica, and there was just like dead silence. I was like, Apollo, still dead silence. I was like,
Battlestar Galactica,
yeah, exactly. I was just like, oh, I guess we all just like sea ship nerds in this room. Not, there's no crossover with spaceship nerds, is it? Is that what we're doing here?
And then, cool. That's right. And Starbuck was.
Katie Sackhoff. She voiced a lot of the stuff in Halo, didn't she? Like a lot of all the female.
That was a great. That was a great part.
Cortana. Is she not?
Oh, is she? No.
Oh, is she?
I thought she was. I could be wrong, but I thought she was. And of course, she is one of the Mandalorians. I can't remember her name right now.
Yeah. That's right. That was. I'm going to go back and watch part of that too. That was a great fucking series, I remember. And like the president, I remember what that was. That was a really good series. How many seasons of that shit was it?
Is it Laura? It wasn't Laura Linney who was the president, was it? No.
Laura something sounds very familiar though. Yeah.
No, it wasn't Laura. I don't think it was Laura Linney, but it's.
Or maybe that was her actual, or I don't know, whatever.
I feel like the person who played the president.
Laura Roslin was the name of the president.
Laura Roslin was the name of the president.
Mary McDonald.
Yeah, that's right. I think she plays the mum in Donnie Darko, you know. I feel like that.
Yeah, she's been around for. Yeah.
Oh, she's been in a few things. Another good film.
Grey's Anatomy, I remember. Yeah, there's a couple of things I remember that. Yeah, Donnie Darko, you're right. Rose Darko. Good call. Another good movie.
I don't remember anything useful half the time, but I can remember some.
6 degrees of separation on Game of Thrones.
Some movie facts. Yeah. Should we do you want to do any news other than news about stuff that's coming up?
I'll fuck the blockchain this week or what?
Well, I mean, I think there's okay. Like we're going to rattle through it because there's a couple of funny things. So Stride are asking for community pool funds. They want 20 million DYDX. you guys do DYDX, right?
We're out. We got pushed out.
Oh, you got pushed out.
Yeah.
So yep. I do DYDX.
So what do you think of the Schultzy?
I'm fine with it. I think the Stride's positive for the ecosystem. I don't know. I think it's fine.
There you go. In conclusion,
there you go. Why do they want? What do they need? What do they need this for? Stride's already active, right? On DYDX.
Stride is already active. Yes. I'm sure it's just to, I don't know, secure their foothold in the cosmos.
The rate of DYDX being staked to validators has plateaued and deposits to the exchange are growing at a tremendous pace. Over $150 million USDC is held in DYDX V4, of which $100 million arrived in the past week. Given the growing adoption of DYDX V4 and the recent adoption. I mean, I also think it's a concern to have too much stake through DYDX or through Stride. So, no. Like, I think it's a positive, but I think, I don't know. I think also this juggernaut needs some serious competition. because this is, it's turning into a fucking thing.
Stride, where Stride's just little blessed proof of authority cartel, isn't it?
Basically? It is a totally blessed by the foundation proof of authority type structure. It goes to this, it goes to the same validator structures across all Stride chains. If you're in that group, it's great. If you're
had the energy, I could add another chapter to my paper on liquid staking cartels.
Fucking Stride is a paper in itself. I think this is the most I think this is probably the most powerful team in the cosmos. 100%.
What, purely like, because of the Kingmaker effect? Or
totally. Like, they make deals like this type of structure. Teams want that liquid staking piece. They're really the only liquid staking structure in town. They control a tremendous amount of the delegation structure of this, right? Like, I think it's a really powerful team within the cosmos, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I understand.
Well, also, like within the cosmos, that's like saying,
I know, right?
That's like saying you're the only guy in the car park with a knife. It's like, well, somebody can just like not go into that car park.
That's like, what is that? 16 candles. Yeah, that's right. That's 16 candles. Like, I'm king of the dipshits and like holding up the ladies' underwear. Yeah, no, I understand. Anyway, so enough about Stride. What are you going to do? I mean, I think, and where's Persistence in all this? Aren't they, or Quicksilver? Like, what happened to these teams?
Quicksilver's dead.
Like, what happened? Completely out?
Well, there's no competition. Quicksilver is owned by Notional, if I remember correctly. So,
really?
Yeah. Yep.
Owned or like, yeah.
Well, I think they're the core devs, I guess, is what I should say, because it's a blockchain, and blockchains can't be owned by one specific individual and entity. But yeah.
But there's no devs left at Notional, so...
Yeah.
Right. Cool.
Well, there's also Persistence, and actually, we kind of fought pushback on the DYDX proposal for splitting some of that with Persistence, so Persistence can have part of the, the stake amount as well. Just to help distribute it more.
Yeah. This thread, I'll put this thread in the show notes. This is the thread related to this type of thing. And really the only people chiming in this thread are the Stride validators. So, or individuals who are in charge of Stride, involved in that team decision. So maybe I'll shit on this a little bit, but this
too
is
too much of the liquid staking stuff. And I'm just like,
action please.
This thread is a closed Discord group that has one public thread where everybody like gets involved in it, but whatever, it'll pass. Great, congrats, enjoy.
Who knows? I mean,
is that too negative?
I don't think
Jake says, you know what, Anjuna, we had this thought that the liquid staking solution should live on the same chain as the chain. Fucking aid, brother. Totally agree.
I mean,
totally fucking agree. I think this is now it's going to turn into a juggernaut that's going to be difficult to unwrap.
I mean, you look at like what Lido and stuff have done in Ethereum, and you're like, the answer is nothing good. Like, nothing good from the perspective. It's back to, do you want decentralization or do you want decentralization theater? Right. And I accept that for the majority of people, we need to go with Rama's definition of what people want from crypto, which they want to have a bit of a laugh and they want to forget about their day job and they want to gamble in the big, funny internet casino. Happy days. Cool. If we want to do that, liquid staking, let's go. Public blockchains forever. Give away all your data. Allow Palantir to mine your financial data for the rest of the time. And let's all just be serfs. And we can scrabble around in the mud on the blockchain while all of the lords sit in a tower and laugh at us. Cool. If that's what you want to do, that's fucking fantastic. Or we could just do like anything other than that and actually try and deliver on the promise of a more useful, better economically aligned structure for how we do things on the interchain and the internet. And I don't at the moment see how any of these large multi-chain liquid staking constructs fucking deliver on that or help deliver on that. And anyway, they're just centralizing on a slightly different adjacent group of people. And it's just the same fucking problem repeating. And you're like, it's okay, the
same
great,
fucking
cool,
problem.
Whatever.
100%. Like, it's just.
What the fuck does this do? Other than allow people to gamble the same money over and over again, which, has never ever worked, by the way, in the history of economic systems. Like, creating more and more derivatives has never led to more stability. It's just not a fucking good idea. And people never learn, obviously.
This is a cartel. So what this is, it's a group of individuals that drive a significant amount of economic benefit to a smaller subgroup through the use of this structure. This is not decentralization. This is a fucking cartel. So like, I understand, what are you going to do? Right. It's a cartel. There's a shitload of cartels. It's not the only cartel. There's a fucking ton of cartels. There's a fucking ton of cartels. Like, I'm not saying that there's like, this is the only one. But this is a fucking cartel. And so it sounds great. This is a fucking cartel. So, and that cartel is a small number of people making those decisions. So recognize, please, that through this structure, this is an extremely centralized set of decision makers that control a significant amount of funds to a significant amount of people. Whatever. DYDX has two validators that control 33%. What the fuck? Who cares? It doesn't really matter. And this is not decentralizing that in any sort of way.